Good morning. I'm calling to order this meeting of the House Workforce Labor and Economic Development Finance and Policy Committee for, I believe it's April 16th. Welcome to everybody. This may well be the last meeting of the committee, and been very much appreciating everyone's work. We today just have the one item on our agenda, which is proposal from Chair Baker and me for consideration by the committee for our finance and policy bill. First, we will address our minutes. And Chair Baker, since you are presiding, would you mind moving approval of our minutes for April 15?
Yes, Mr. Chair, so moved.
Okay, thank you. And I should have noted we do have a quorum. Any additions or corrections, members? And seeing none, all in favor of approval, please say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Those minutes are approved. Members, we this can be a maybe slightly confusing process regarding the bill, so just kind of walk us through. I can see Representative Schultz smiling. So House File 3732, we had before the committee 2 days ago. We considered two proposals from me that came in the form of a DE1 amendment to that bill. Those proposals are contained in the, I think actually without any changes, in fact, are contained in the proposal from Chair Baker and me today. But in order to sort of get everything in the right shape, what we're going to do is we have to back out of the amendment we made on Tuesday so that the bill gets clean. And then we'll be moving the DE2 amendment the members have in their packet, which consists of our proposal. We'll have House staff walk through that amendment, walk through the DE. We will have any public testimony. And then we've got a couple amendments, excuse me, member amendments that were submitted, which we'll consider, vote on them, have discussion, vote on the DE2, and then finally vote on the bill. Are there, we'll see if there are member questions about that. We can also revisit it a little bit later. And not seeing any, so we will then, I'll ask then, Chair Baker, if you're willing to move reconsideration of the DE1 amendment from the other day.
Yes, so moved, Mr.
Okay,
Chair.
Okay, thank you. So any members, any discussion about that motion? So all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, so the bill is now back to being the clean House File 3732. And then, Chair Baker, I'll ask if you can move the DE2 amendment then, which contains our proposal.
Yes, Mr. Chair, so moved.
Okay, so that the DE2 is before us, members. And so, again, the plan is we're going to have Ms. Shaleen and Ms. Eng walk us through the DE2. We'll see if there are member questions. We'll get testimony, amendments, discussion, et cetera. So we'll turn to our terrific House Research House fiscal staff, Ms. Shaleen.
Chair and members, Anna Shaleen, House Research. Let me get this. I'm going to walk through the DE2. Article 1, this is policy and appropriations to the Department of Employment and Economic Development. The first section is that comes from the House File 4884, the Governor's Supplemental Bill. This is the technical language about the Innovative Business Development Public Infrastructure Program that was discussed on Tuesday. It modifies that program so that if an eligible project of public infrastructure was intended to serve, was not developed within 10 years of being awarded the grant, it can be used to serve a different project. Sections 2 through 5 are all new language. The chairs have a proposal. In discussions with the agency over last interim, we have an existing program, the Support Services Grant Program. Currently, organizations apply for a competitive workforce training grant, one of the competitive programs, and then also apply to the support services program to get money to provide support services in conjunction with training. This is things like childcare or a bus pass that just increase the odds of successfully enrolling in and completing training. In discussions with the department, it was discovered that actually, it made more sense to integrate support services as a component of all the existing grant programs rather than requiring groups to do a second grant program. So that's what sections 2 through 5 and then also 7-11 do, is it puts support services as an allowable cost into the Youth Build program, the Minnesota Youth program, and the Youth at Work programs. This will just increase efficiency and you won't have to do two different grants. Section 6, this is Chair Baker's proposal that's been previously discussed from House File as an amendment earlier. It's the creation of a subcommittee of the Governor's Workforce Development Board to review applications from nonprofit organizations and make recommendations to the legislature about which applicants should receive funding from the Workforce Development Fund. In this version of this subcommittee, The subcommittee will be composed both of existing Governor's Workforce Development Board members and a few special appointments made by the governor for a representative of workers who is not from a labor organization and for some community members. The group will also identify workforce needs that are unlikely to be met by market forces. And it stipulates that the committee must conduct outreach, list the minimum criteria they consider in reviewing. And it limits the subcommittee to a maximum of $10 million of funding recommendations. These recommendations have to be approved by a vote of the full board and then submitted to the legislature, to the committees with jurisdiction by February 1st of every odd-numbered year beginning in 2027. There's also an appropriation for this subcommittee later in the bill. Section 7, again, this is just integrating support services, this time into the CanTrain program. Section 8 creates the healthcare workforce grant program. Was discussed earlier. It creates and codifies the healthcare workforce grant program that makes competitive grants to address workforce shortages in the healthcare sector. Grants can be made to local governments, nonprofits, and educational institutions to pay for workforce development efforts to address market shortages. Outlines grant processes, award criteria, and performance metrics, and requires an annual report on program outcomes. Section 9, this is new language. The agency requested that the Uniform Outcome Report Card, the report card online will remain the same. They requested that the report to the legislature that is currently every year. They'd prefer to do that only in the even-numbered years, every other year. Most of their grants are on a two-year basis, and so in the mid-year report just doesn't have a lot of useful information. They said that if they do it every 2 years, not only is there a little bit of a cost savings to that and the savings of staff time, but they can do a more in-depth analysis that should be more useful to making funding decisions. Section 10, this is new language, the chairs' proposal, the joint chairs, for codification of the Pathways to Prosperity program. This is an existing program that's been funded since 2016, but only in session law. and it assists adults facing barriers to employment with preparing for and finding employment. It defines eligible services and lays out award criteria, grant processes, and performance metrics. Again, this is just something that exists currently, but putting in statute so it's a little more transparent. Section 12, this is from House File 3393. This is the extended unemployment insurance benefits for iron ore mining people. Extends unemployment benefits through March 20, 2027 for iron ore mining workers subject to mass layoffs between November of last year and March 15th of this year. The bill would be retroactively effective from November 1st, 2025. On top of the regular 26 weeks of unemployment benefits, an applicant is eligible for additional weeks of benefits if they earned at least 50% of their wage credits from an employer in the iron ore mining industry or related explosives manufacturing industry and were laid off by that employer. Eligible applicants would have to meet regular eligibility criteria as well. And if they're involved in the trade readjustment allowance benefits, they aren't eligible for these additional benefits because they already have extra benefits. Section 13, it has been previously discussed. This is extended employment from House File 4193, I believe. It requires Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development from July 1st, 2026 through June 30, 2028 to waive enforcement of rules forbidding individuals on the medical assistance waiver from receiving extended employment services as well if the individual cannot be served another way. It stipulates that the program provider must submit a form to qualify for this waiver and that non-waivered participants must be prioritized without being waitlisted. This section is effective the day following final enactment and expires in July 1st of 2028. Section 14. This is from House File 4003. The Rural Cancer Institute pilot program appropriation is modified. It corrects it so that will require prioritization of Minnesota clinicians and students while allowing work with those from elsewhere in the United States on the recommendation of a practicing Minnesota oncologist if all care is provided in Minnesota. And it keeps available the fiscal years 2026 and 2027 appropriations until the end of fiscal year 2028, effective the day following final enactment. Section 15, this was Chair Pinto's concept from earlier this week about the Office of Community Investment. It appropriates money to establish and operate an Office of Community Investment within the Department of Employment and Economic Development run by a director. This director is assigned extensive duties overseeing grant making within the agency and across state government, potentially. And then Section 16 is the appropriation for the subcommittee of the Governor's Workforce Development Fund, because they would require additional staff to perform this work. Moving on to Article 2, the entirety of Article 2 is the Department of Labor and Industry technical language from bills previously discussed. This includes removing the Class A electrician licenses and beginning the phase out of the Class B licenses, matching building code enforcement with existing practice, and the adjustments to the fees, mostly making that less expensive. Don't think there's, since that's all been discussed so recently, I won't go into further detail about that. Article 3 is the Explore Minnesota article. This contains changes to the Explore Minnesota councils at the request of the Explore Minnesota. This has been discussed in an earlier hearing. It's basically changing some of the membership, adjusting things, and moving things around in the statute. Reducing some of the councils from 35 members to 25. And changing some of who the representatives are. I can get into it further if anyone has questions. Article 4 is for the Northern Technology Initiative, Inc. This article is new language from the joint chairs. Northern Technology Initiative, Inc. is a public benefit corporation, or a public corporation. It was founded about 20 years ago. It's a coalition of East Central Minnesota counties, cities, and educational institutions working on collaborative economic development projects. It was founded in statute over 20 years ago. Unfortunately, then everybody forgot it was in statute. And so while they also have a corporate charter and rules that they're following, that has diverged from what is in statute. The changes in sections 1 and 2 just sync up, make some minor technical changes to sync up what they're doing in real life with what's in the statute, changing the membership to reflect the counties that have actually been involved, no longer requiring the commissioner of deed to be on this board since they have never been involved in this board. And the statute currently requires them to have an executive director and staff. Then they're a very small organization that doesn't require these things. They just hire a as-needed consultant. So these are small technical changes. The organization has reviewed this and says, yep, this meets what we need. And it's just getting this into compliance. So the statute isn't requiring things that aren't being done. Article 5 is all repealing obsolete programs within DEED. The sections 1 through 6 are making conforming changes to just remove mentions of these programs from other programs that they get mentioned in. Section 7 is canceling a small amount of funds that are currently stranded in the Capital Access Program account and sending those back to the general fund. I believe it's like $33,000. There's also a little bit that comes back automatically from one of these other accounts. And then Section 8 is repealing the different programs. This language would repeal the Capital Access Program. This was last funded in 1993. The Rural Job Creation Grants, which was last funded in 2000. The Tourism Loan Program, which was last funded in 2001. The Minnesota Green Enterprise Assistance Program, which was last founded in 2009, but became a different program that has its own funding and is still working. The Special Incumbent Worker Training Grants, which were last funded in 2008 and were only funded for a couple of years. Again, a lot of these are ideas that someone had and it just didn't really work out and the legislature hasn't revisited it. The Central Minnesota Opportunity Grant Program. This language made a single direct grant to a named nonprofit in 2018. It's unclear why it was ever codified. The Economic Response Team, this has been organized differently and is being done by a different group now. the micro enterprise and entrepreneurial assistance, which was last funded in 2001 and has evolved to become a different program that is still operating, and the Minnesota Science and Technology Economic Development Project. This was essentially a task force that did a single report in 2010. And again, it's just sort of been stranded in statute. This article does the cleanup necessary to clear that all out. And I believe that is everything that is in the bill.
Okay, thank you. I think maybe before we go to Ms. Eng, we'll just see if there are questions about for Ms. Shalene at this point. We'll obviously have further discussion later. I'm not seeing anybody, I don't believe, so we'll move to Ms. Eng, if you can walk us through the spreadsheet.
Mr. Chair and members, Ashley Eng of House Fiscal. Looking at the spreadsheet on line two, the net general fund impact for the House File 3732.
Mr. Chair.
Is there some confusion?
Yeah, we're seeking to find the
Yeah, so there's a, it's a little bit in, buried in there, legal size. Landscape mode.
It's after the amendments.
After the amendments, yeah. Yeah, good point. Thanks. I was looking for it myself, so thanks. Okay, sorry, Ms. Eng. Yeah.
Looking at the right columns, House File 3732, the DE2, the net general fund impact for fiscal year 2027 is $358,000, and then for the 2829 biennium, the total is $800,000. Down on line 22, the Workforce Development Fund impact is $401,000 in fiscal year 2027 and then $802,000 in the 2829 biennium. Down on line 396, this is page 2, the impact of the Workforce Development Fund is from the Governor's Workforce Development Board subcommittee report to the legislature. That's the $401,000. Each year, and then down on line 407, that is the Office of Community Investment at $400,000 each year from the general fund. And then finally, on the third page, on line 502, there is the repeal of the obsolete programs, has a general fund savings of $42,000. And that concludes the spreadsheet walkthrough. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Eng. And again, members, seeing if there are questions for Ms. Eng at all. Not seeing any. And so at this time, I'll ask if there are members of the public who wish to testify regarding the bill. Mr. Moore is on his way up. Okay. Once you get settled in, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. My name is Josiah Moore. I'm the Legislative Director at the Department of Labor and Industry. I will follow in Ms. Shalene's footsteps and decline to summarize Article 2, which does include the construction codes and licensing provisions from the governor's budget and DLI's policy agenda. But I just wanted to make two notes in support of that inclusion. First, a note of appreciation to the dedicated staff in the construction codes and licensing division at DLI, without whom making these technical updates would not be possible. And two, thank you to the chairs and the committee for including these provisions in your bill. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you so much. See if there are questions for you. Not seeing any. Okay. Anybody else in the public wish to testify? You were the only one who signed up, and looks like there's nobody else who wants to. I will note that there's a letter from Deed in our packets regarding the proposal as well, and identify some things they like, some requests, et cetera, so I want to check that out. Okay, with that, we'll have public testimony close. We will have, I think we'll move to amendments at this point. And Representative Greenman, I think you have the first one. We'll go to you. I believe that's yours. Are you moving the A4 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, yeah, if you can please describe the amendment to us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a friendly amendment, looking at the Office of Community Investment, and one of the ideas I think that is really important in this is coming up with a coordinated and engaged set of priorities that include the legislature, the executive branch, and the wider community. And I think that from our conversations has been in the conversation but wasn't in the language. And so that's all this does is it incorporates the idea that part of this job of this community investment office would be to engage us as well as the executive branch and the broader community in setting priorities.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. Members, are there discussions, questions? I'll go to Chair Baker.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. I like what the idea is here. Representative Greenman, again, I'd like to support the amendment. Makes sense. It does what we're trying to do here and make that office better. So I would encourage members to support the amendment.
All right, terrific. Thank you. Members, other discussion questions folks have? Okay, then in that case, all in favor of approval of the A4 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. So we've got that amendment in place. The other amendment, I believe, is being brought by Chair Frazier. And Chair Frazier, we'll turn to you regarding the A2 amendment. I assume you're moving that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And kind of like what Representative Greenman said, I see this as not only as a friendly amendment for Minnesotan businesses that were impacted by Metro Surge, but a critical amendment for those businesses. Many of those businesses, as best they could, participated in mutual aid efforts to help take care of their workers in the communities that they serve. But many of those businesses suffered great financial losses due to the presence of federal agents during Metro Surge, due to the fear that was causing workers not showing up to work, lessening the foot traction to most of those businesses, and many of them took economic losses. This amendment adds in much of what we discussed during the prior weeks in the economic release package. It does provide a number, and the Representative Schultz was very concerned about the amount that this was cost. That amount is $100 million, $50 million coming from the general fund and $50 million coming from the forward fund. It also lays out the criteria for eligibility. It also has a split of $80 million, $100 million total, $80 million to the Minneapolis, $50 million to the Minneapolis Foundation, $50 million to the St. Paul Foundation, but a dedicated amount of $20 million subgrants to the initiative foundations to ensure that those resources reach greater Minnesota businesses that have been harmed by the surge in federal occupation as well. That is the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Frazier. We'll see if members have discussion or questions. Representative Schultz, we'll go to you first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Frazier.
Yes.
I'm not going to get into the same level of back and forth as we did last week. However, my question for you is, one of my key concerns was the specific pinpoint around federal enforcement activity. And I'm curious as to why you didn't see fit to remove that specific language and rather refer to the dates, just so that there isn't such a partisan nature behind this. And I'm just trying to keep this, around this table. Like, let's try and find a way here. And I'm just curious why you still have those words in the amendment.
Chair Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Schultz, I understand your point, but I think you would appreciate this answer, is that we want to make sure that the business receiving the resources, that it was in fact due to the nature of what was happening with Metro Surge. I mean, there were businesses that were having issues that are related to other situations. That is not the focus. We are focusing on the situation that happened during Metro Surge. Now, I would imagine you'd appreciate that. But as we will have a few more weeks to negotiate this, we can continue to have this conversation.
Representative Schultz, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Obviously, that's concerning for me. My next question for you, Representative Frazier, and it's more so based in this desire to help people as quickly as possible, is I'm concerned with this particular program from a perspective of trying to get the money out as quickly as possible to help people. Representative Frazier, like, my perspective in that is just coming back to like what we have seen in some of the other programs that we've sought to stand up, and how it has delayed and taken a very long time to make that happen with good program integrity measures and with, our total goals of ensuring that it's reaching the people that it's intended to. And so that's one of my main reasons for not supporting this today, is I don't know that setting up a new program is going to be the most efficient way to get money and relief to people who need it. And that's across the board, right? These are very similar concerns to the concerns that I have with the Promise Act, and the concern, just generally speaking, like looking back and saying, hey, we made this appropriation in 2023 and it being spring of 2026. That's my primary concern. Like, And so I believe that there is a better way to do this than what is contained in here. So I don't support this amendment today. I will be voting no, and I believe we should have a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. There certainly will be one. I may go, Chair Baker, to you last and go to a couple of members first. So then Representative Hussein.
Thank you, Representative Frazier, for bringing this forward. It is critical and it's very important for us to support this friendly amendment. In my district and throughout the state, there's a lot of businesses that are struggling, Representative Schultz. I need you to see it. Maybe we could take a walk and show you how many businesses are closing. And the more businesses are closing, the more problem that we would have. Those people are taxpayers. They hire more people to put them to work. The small businesses are our foundations and how America succeeds. We need this time to help for those people. If you see a right Lake Street and you see Cedar Riverside and you see on University Avenue, a lot of businesses are really struggling because they were closed during this metro surge. And a lot of employees who was illegally detained. And you know some of the citizens of my district was detained too, born here in America. So a lot of people was feeling fear, businesses was closed, a lot of people was not going to buy our product that they need. So this is, we bailed out when it comes to COVID, and we did bipartisan together and saved the businesses in Minnesota. Civil unrest, you know, we have helped in Minnesota small businesses to keep their door open, but this bill and this amendment will have a lot of businesses, hundreds of businesses, continue to open their doors. Not only for those people are struggling, our throughout state, every businesses are struggling. This would help. We're not putting this money to nonprofits. It's going to foundations who's going to match, who's going to handle very well and give this money to the people that really need it. What the foundation also done this year is a few weeks ago, they helping also people that cannot pay for the rent. There's a lot of struggle that we've seen. We want to see, if we want to see more homelessness and if we want to see more evictions and if we want to see more businesses close, this is the time that we need to act up and put this money bipartisan and support for those small businesses. And I want to thank you all for my colleagues. Please vote yes.
Thank you. Now, Representative Greenman, to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Chair Frazier, for the work you've done on this bill and the listening and the way you've designed it, because I know it is actually taken into account what we really think we need, which is relief for these small businesses who, through no fault of their own, were impacted by the lawless federal occupation. And I just to respond a bit to you, Representative Schultz, you know, the thing that was the most harmful in our recovery after George Floyd and after what happened was that we didn't pass anything until 2023. The inaction that happened because we couldn't get bipartisan support. And so the worst thing we can do in terms of not delivering relief is not acting today. And I know that we all share concerns when there is money appropriated and agencies do not provide that relief. I know that Representative Frazier is actually thinking about and built into this bill a way to ensure that we are getting relief quicker. And the thing that I think is hard to hear about your comments and the comments when we hear that we're just not going to do this bill actually contains relief for another set of Minnesotans who, through no fault of their own, were impacted by decisions outside their control. And that is minors who are impacted by decisions by national and multinational companies. And I think we share the value that there are interventions that we need to make as a legislature for folks in the state, no matter where they are in the state, and that includes small business owners who are employing folks, who are invested in people, and who, during Operation Metro Sturge, stood up for the Constitution, stood up for their workers and their communities in a way that, frankly, we didn't see the giant multinational businesses who don't need our help. And so I'd hope that in the spirit of this committee and in the spirit of the work that I know we have all done in, and we have all talked about the importance of small businesses, our Main Street businesses, that we will say and adopt this amendment and just say this was something through no fault of their own that these local businesses encountered, and we need to step up today to protect them, to ensure that they are there for when we come back in 2027 and have that conversation that we started yesterday about how we invest in our local big business climate. And this is the way to do that. So I would really hope we have bipartisan support to add this and move it forward and say that we are going to take care of the people who, through no fault of their own, are impacted by things that they could not have planned for or prepared for.
Thank you. Now we'll go to Chair Baker, unless one of the other members, it looks like not. Okay, Chair Baker, to you.
Thank you, and Representative Frazier, appreciate your work on this. I know we've had a lot of conversations. Representative Hussein, I do want to join you, and if we get others to take a walk in your district right here. I've seen them closing up more, and it's not just recent, but it's been over time. And again, as you and I have become friends and we co-host things together, I know your work for your small businesses has been remarkable, but we can do a lot more than just throw money at them today or temporarily to give them that temporary relief. We need to do permanent relief. When I was visiting earlier this year with, again, Chair Frazier and Chair Zhang about how could a bill look winnable and doable in a time when we are at historic tie here in the Minnesota House, and it needs to really think outside the box. And recently we haven't thought that way because we just throw money at problems. We just throw money at it. You know, in 23, we spent $18 billion out of the surplus and we raised taxes by $10 billion. And what we need to try to do is something a little different. There will be a day again when I think that there's gonna be emergency funding, there's gonna be disasters. We are gonna see it again someday. I can tell you my tenure here has been that we have to make sure that we provide the soil for businesses to actually grow and succeed, and then we get to throw out more seeds once in a while or maybe some fertilizer to make sure that we've got the right kind of, you know, bed to make sure that our businesses will be stronger before the next disaster. So when the disaster does hit and they have to close all of a sudden for different reasons, it isn't that they're going to be out of business in a matter of weeks because they didn't have the cash flow and the cash ability to kind of have built up. What I want to do is walk around and talk to your businesses with you and ask them what they think of, though, some of the policies that we've imposed on them over the recent years. That's important for us to have that conversation honestly. Right now, we have a serious problem in Minnesota to support our smallest businesses. They're just different than the large multinational companies. And We are lucky to have all sizes of businesses here. So I'm just saying, I wish we could have worked differently and maybe a little bit more with more of an open dialogue about what we could have worked on together. I would have wanted to support something today with some dollar relief, but with some also very strong ongoing policy relief, like earned sick and safe time discussions, paid family medical leave adjustments. I'm not talking about repealing, but I'm talking about things that I know that are important to certain size businesses that we've attempted to do here this year. I know Chair Robbins brought a bill that was 15 and under exemption. We could have talked about that opt-out, not forcing anybody out, because some of them may want to stay in. But we need more choices for our small businesses so that we don't impose Minnesota government to make it harder to do business here. I'm proud of the work that we've done this year. I can't support the bill today as it is because it's just a very temporary fix to a solution, I think, that has bad soil today. I hope that we can do better with policy. I hope we get serious about that in coming days. We're not out of this yet. We can do some things maybe in the conference committee. I thank you for your work on this. I do believe our businesses were hurt with this operation, and I think we can do better, but we really have to make sure that we look forward with better policies of what we can do, and it's not just throwing money at these things. So again, members, today I can't support this amendment, Mr. Chair, but appreciate the conversation.
Thank you, Chair Baker. Before I send it back to Chair Frazier, I'll just note that just a reminder, we're talking about these individual businesses that we all agree there's, I would hope, through no fault of their own, this being in this situation, and there's a real danger that we lose them entirely. I understand the broader policy concerns that you're referencing, Chair Baker, and this is a really acute situation. I said this in Ways and Means the other day, but if Metro Surge were a storm surge, there wouldn't be any dispute at all. We would absolutely be doing this. And for these businesses, it really, for them individually, it is the same as a natural disaster, exactly the same. Came in, swept right on through, and whatever we think about the federal activity in our state. Chair Frazier, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the small business owners that are out there listening, if you're watching right now, you can, or you watch later, we understand that you need help from us. We understand the impact of Metro Surge on your businesses, on your workers, and on your communities. We are bringing legislation to address that. Our government caused this issue. We are trying as elected officials to bring a solution that can help you. I've heard folks mention that this is a short-term fix. Well, we're addressing an issue that is in real time right now, and that is how we should address it. We should focus on the now. I've heard folks say that the money's not gonna get out quick enough. That is not a reason to not act. That is a reason to come together and figure out how to get the money out as quickly as possible. And I know that there are some legislators that are going to vote against this that have businesses in their communities that really need these resources. All I'm asking is that we come together and we help the businesses and we help the communities that we know need to help. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And thank you, Chair Frazier. With that, the clerk will take the roll on the A2 amendment.
Chair Pinto?
Aye.
Chair Pinto, aye. Chair Baker?
No.
Chair Baker, no. Vice Chair Greenman?
Yes.
Greenman, yes. Vice Chair Mekeland?
No.
Mekeland, no. Representative Bakeberg?
No.
Bakeberg, no. Representative Berg?
Yes.
Berg, yes. Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Frazier, aye. Representative Hussein?
Aye.
Hussein, aye. Representative Pete Johnson?
Aye.
Pete Johnson, yes. Representative Wayne Johnson?
No.
Wayne Johnson, no. Representative Kozlowski?
Aye.
Kozlowski, aye. Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Mueller, no. Representative Schultz?
Schultz, no.
Schultz, no. Representative Zelensikar? No. Zelensikar, no. Chair, there are 7 ayes and 7 nays.
With 7 ayes and 7 nays, the motion does not pass. The amendment is not adopted. So with that, we are then to House File 3732 as amended. Are there further questions, discussion from members regarding the bill? Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When we're looking at the Office of Community Investment, I want to just highlight, I know I've at least had this conversation in at least one private conversation, that DEED has many different offices underneath its purview. My primary lens through which I want to see this is, what opportunity do we have, and do we need specific legislation to help consolidate potentially other offices and to realize that there are several others that are set up? And I'm wondering if we can also save some taxpayer money by doing so, not to take away from the purposes of those other offices, but just thinking that there might be some of those, especially because DEED has several different offices, right? Numerous different ones. And I guess I would be curious, maybe we could even hear from DEED as to what conversations they maybe have had internally that could talk about and bring about, you know, consolidation, so that we aren't adding additional costs to taxpayers for the long term, realizing that your goal to both of the chairs here. This is a good thing. Like, this is a positive step, more so just a conversation over what can we do to consolidate within the agency.
Absolutely, yeah. I have a few thoughts regarding that. We can certainly call up Mr. Bowdery if he's here. I think it's fair to say, we'll see if Mr. Bowdery agrees, that DEET is still processing this idea, this proposal. Again, I have some thoughts, but we'll, since you directed to DEET, we'll hear from them, and then I can provide those thoughts. Mr. Bowdery, if you can identify yourself and then answer the question.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Devin Bowdery, Government Relations Director at DEET. Representative Schultz, you're correct. We do have a wide variety of offices, from economic development, workforce, paid leave, unemployment insurance. We're always happy to have discussions about how to streamline and consolidate when appropriate. As it pertains to Section 15, the Office of Community Investment, Chair Pinto, you're correct. We're still analyzing this and the implications of this language here.
Maybe stay where you are, because I would need to be surprised if Representative Schultz has further questions, but maybe I'll provide Representative Schultz just a couple thoughts in response, and you see where you want to go. I suspect that as DEET finishes its analysis of this, its digestion of this, that that the amount of funds that we are allocating in $400,000, that DEET will say, well, that wouldn't be possible to do without some restructuring. I just would add a couple people for the kind of strategic focus that we're talking about to parallel the Office of Justice Programs at DPS. Probably more substantial. So just even the amount of money that we're appropriating would require some moving things around. You can't just add a whole new office on top of everything with this amount of money. The other thing I'll note, though, is that I'm thinking about our conversations in the Fraud Prevention Committee, that we do want to be careful. We certainly want to be as streamlined as possible, as efficient with taxpayer resources as possible. And we know that one of the contributing factors to some of the challenges we've seen with program integrity is where the legislature has focused on programs and not focus so much on some of the structures around them. We want to make sure that we are providing adequate funding. So we just want to make sure we're being careful about that. I know that you would agree with that as well. And always examining what we're doing to make sure that's done as efficiently as possible. But I would say, but the short answer to your question is I would expect there would need to be some reallocating of resources to sort of make this office work within the funding that we're providing. And I would hope that that would happen. But Representative Schultz, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To DEET, a quick question for you. Like, how many different individual offices do you have within, like, I do think that there's some that, like, when you Google it, they don't necessarily even just immediately come up. So I'm just curious, like, if you know, Devin, like, what number of offices do we have? This isn't a big appropriation. It's not, you know, this is a couple, you know, FTEs, I assume.
Right.
What is the number of offices that you have?
Mr. Bowdery. Might have to get back to, but Mr. Bowdery?
Yeah, Chair Pinto, Representative Schultz, I'd have to get back to you on official count, but a good amount.
See if
offices and sub-offices below that.
And it may be that Ms. Chalene's trying to figure that out. I'm not sure, but we'll see if we can get you answered as soon as we can, if not during this hearing. Yes. Representative Schultz.
No, just only other comment on that particular piece, Mr. Chair, would just be there's plenty of time between now and when this reaches the floor. In addition to, you know, when we conclude session there, I think that if we just work collaboratively, maybe we can sort some of that out. I think that that's something that we should try and focus on, especially for the long term for the state. I did have
let's hold on 1 second. I think Chair Baker.
Before you leave that subject item, Representative Schultz, I just wanted to comment also on Chair Pinto's work on this too. I supported this office because, again, I think that what I've seen in my time on workforce, DEET needs to step up their game a bit on reporting depth and knowledge and the information that we get. They need to be on time with the reporting that hasn't been good. And our mission has been, let's do more through competitive grants than direct appropriations. So I think that what we need to do as a legislator is make sure that we don't just throw it at them without giving them a little bit of resources to make sure that we have now given them the tools to succeed at this. I think our future legislators need to know what is happening with the money, where is it going, how did it get, how did it work? Did it successfully get the goals that we wanted to do? And I don't think we're getting enough information on that. I think that was clear with the Office of Legislative Auditor last year, that we just said, look, we can do better here. And I think that's our commitment, to make sure that any taxpayer dollars that go towards this, we have to have a better outcome And this, I think, will help us a lot in that. So before we left that issue, I want to just cover that with you, too. So
thank you so much. And I'll maybe just, I was going to note as well, I mean, it really is the case. I think the deed is processing this. I suspect, Representative Schultz, there will be questions in these coming weeks regarding this as deed is thinking about it. I've been thinking about how you, Mr. Bowdery, and your team would implement this, and so working on it. I know, so Representative Schultz, you still have the floor. I think Representative Greenman may have something, a comment relating to this. If that's okay, we'll go to you. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you both, Representative Baker and Chair Pinto, Chair Baker, and Representative Schultz. I actually think I'm in agreement in that what we are trying to accomplish, I feel like in my 6 years here, there has been frustrations with resources that we've appropriated. Money hasn't gotten out the door. There's been frustrations with competitive grant programs that we have heard are sort of distributing money in a way that may not accomplish the goals that we set out. There is frustration, I think, by some of us with sort of the fact that we have often responded to that frustration with direct appropriations, which then just feels like a bifurcated way to do this. And I think getting to a place where what we're saying is, here are having early conversations about here are the workforce needs and the economic development needs of the state, right? And we can have conversations about that. We can disagree about that. But ultimately, we should come up with some guiding principles. And there's the workforce development councils that are doing that, and the governor's work. There's the administration. There's also all of our conversations in our communities. And right now, those feel like a siloed set of things. And then we get here and we pass our budgets, and it is often a negotiation. And I think, and then I think to Chair Baker's point, we don't always feel like we get the, okay, we did that, so what impact did it have? And I think the goal of having a an office that is responsible and accountable for that and to engaging us right now, and as we talk about, I mean, we can't even list the amount of programs that we sort of either fund and are doing things, right? That scattershot approach and that is, I think, what we're trying to do. So I actually think it is worth talking about, not in the context of, again, I don't think $400,000, if it is well managed and sort of de-siloing, is a good investment. But I do think thinking about all the other ways we've done that, I think we've started that work by codifying some of these competitive grant programs mm-hmm. that we believe are doing what we need to do. I think we need to look further in how those grants are going out the door and some of the criticisms that we've heard, both in terms of speed and in terms of allocation. Are they really getting to the problems we're trying to solve? Are they really supporting the kinds of the way that programs need to be supported? But the goal here, I think, would be that we use this having an office that I think would be more accountable to that goal and more accountable. This is where I wanted to add the amendment to working with us to do some of that, where I think that, you know, we're still here I've just been here 6 years. I know this conversation has been going on, but have not felt like we've gotten there with when we've just asked the agency for more of that, including trying to codify some of these grants last year. So I really appreciate the work that's being done. I really appreciate that we have both bipartisan support and also bipartisan leadership, and just wanted to say that in response to the work, I think, Representative Schultz, that you're asking for.
Okay, and then back to Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I appreciate the work. I think we're on the right track, just all around the table on that. Switching gears then to Article 4. So for frame of reference, this touches three of my counties, five of them in East Central Minnesota. I wasn't aware of this in-state statute previously, but I will just also mention for the record, I've been doing a ton of work across East Central Minnesota for the last decade. I've never even heard of this entity. I don't know if this is a question for the chairs, just to gain a little bit more understanding, if it's a question for Ms. Choline. So. I really want to understand, because like, if I'm not aware of this organization, given the work that I have done, I don't know that it's relevant to the future of Minnesota.
Ms. Choline?
Chair and members, part of the reason you may not be aware of them is they actually have been operating under a different name for most of the last 20 years. other than this, and that's one of the things that this language would clear up, is allowing them to legally work under that assumed name.
Are you able to share that name?
It's changed. I believe it's East Central Development now. It is fairly well known.
If someone knows the name, by the way, if you're in the room and could come to the front and tell us the name, we'd really appreciate it. But okay.
I don't believe they're, yeah.
Okay.
Yes, so that would be why the Northern Technology Initiative is just not a known name.
And Ms. Shalene, just remind us, because I think for a number of our members, this may seem like an odd article, just, and again, the reason behind these changes again?
The reason behind the changes is the organization is created as a public corporation, a little bit of a weird way of organizing it. They also have a nonprofit charter, and so they've been operating as a nonprofit. They sort of, somewhere in the changeover of between, you know, because this is a coalition of different counties and a few educational institutions like Pine Tech is involved in this, trying to work on bringing economic development to East Central Minnesota. So these are not trying to do a collaborative approach. The way they've been operating got a little out of sync with what's in the statute, and we're trying to join those back up. So there aren't any potential legal issues with that.
Representative Schultz, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Shalene, would it be the East Central Regional Development Commission?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Schultz.
Far more trusted organization, does a lot of good work in community. Okay. They're in my email inbox at least weekly. Okay. That's a far different circumstance.
Representative Schultz has heard of them. Good. We're solid.
What's that?
I said Representative Schultz has heard of them.
Yes. No, solid. I just wanted to make sure.
No, I get it.
Makes sense. Does this mean the commission's going to be renamed now? I mean, tell me more about this.
I believe, Ms. Shalene, it looks like they're going to, this will confirm that they legally can operate under the name that you know them as, I believe, but Ms. Shalene?
Yes. When we were developing this language last interim, working in collaboration with them and their staff, basically, we were trying to change as little as the statute as possible to just get it so it's okay to just leave that be. Honestly, if we could have confirmed that we could get rid of the statute and it wouldn't affect them in any way, we would have done that. or we would have proposed doing that at least. It allows them to operate under the name they're currently operating under. They've changed it a few times, and we wanted to give them the possibility of changing it again if, as the group evolves, that makes more sense. Without having to come to the legislature and get this through the process. It removes Carlton County from the list of counties because they have never been involved, and adds Mille Lacs because they have been. They have, over the last 20 years, broadened from being just focused on technology companies to doing all kinds of economic development, so giving them that freedom. Instead of, again, keep getting it so they are less tied to this statute, allowing them to change their membership composition and terms and so on through their bylaws rather than needing statutory changes in the future. And so we got rid of all of the stuff about deed being involved. When I checked with the agency last interim, they also, you know, they hadn't been involved with this in 20 years because, again, I don't know what happened that this got dropped. It happened a long time ago, is all I can confirm. Adding Mille Lacs in. And getting rid of the director because, again, they've never operated with a director. It's sort of a very collaborative thing between the different counties. They all have representatives, and they have paid consultant staff. And that's it, really.
Okay. Representative Schultz, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And let this be just a note for everyone. If you have something like this where you don't know happening in your district, it's good to get clarity on. Number one, because like this entity has tremendous impact, right? And you as an elected official or your community, they will have questions if you don't know this, because it directly determines economic outcomes and results in your community for the benefit, you know, and also there are huge liabilities when there isn't a public trust in an organization like this. So thank you for providing that additional context, and I'm going to give them a call.
Okay, Representative Schultz. Members, any other discussion or questions? Maybe before I go to Chair Baker, I assume he's going to have comments. I'm just one small thing I just wanted to note that I became aware of that Article 1 section, I think it's 15, but the one relating to, no, it's Section 12, pardon me, the iron ore mining additional unemployment benefits. My understanding is that the language is a little bit different than what we voted out of committee regarding the date, in particular the date when the period starts. I think there may have been some, there may have been an amendment requested by Deed. In any case, rather than addressing it at this point, I just kind of want to make a note that that's something we're going to need to look into, and certainly before the bill would pass through Ways and Means, we'd want to make sure that that is made very clear and is working. I understand that there's an amendment made in a different committee. This is potentially catching that up, catching up to that. Indeed, it requested it, but I just want to make sure to note for the record that's something I want to make sure that we're clear on before this would advance further. And then I will have a couple more comments, but Chair Baker, to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think this is kind of wrapping up our work here. At least the bill, and maybe we can do our thank yous for folks a little bit later on too, or something. Again, I want to thank the committee for our 2 years of work. Getting up early with us hasn't been easy for a lot of us. And I tell you, I'm proud of what we've had to do. We were given by the voters the ability to say, figure out how to get along because you're going to be 50-50. And that's not always the easiest thing to do. We've seen around here how you do it when you don't need the votes from the other side, and it's challenging when you're in the minority. And I think so many of us have served both ways, and so we know how it works in that scope. In 4 days, a lot of our businesses are going to experience for the first time their payment for paid family medical leave. It's due April 20th. The monies that they either withheld from their the employees have paid it, but the other half will come from the employers. The employers are the ones who have to create those jobs to have this benefit. And I think when we pass anything around here at that magnitude, it's important to say that, our side or business-friendly folks are going to continue to keep fighting for why balance matters. Because with paid family medical leave and other unfunded mandates that go towards businesses that take money from them and more money goes to the state, for whatever reason it is going to be hard for them to operate long term. So that payment is coming up and it's real. So I want us to remember that when we work on bills like this, we have to do them in a bipartisan fashion for anything like this going forward. And I hope that whoever is running the show here next year remembers that, because it's important to get it right, because it's not a one-size-fits-all state. I'm worried about the future of Minnesota business, and I wish we could have done more this year, but we weren't able to. And we were able to agree on a lot of things. I'm really proud of this bill because of the grant reform work that we have done, that Chair Pinto and I really had a very strong commitment to work on early on. Even before all of the fraud stuff hit the headlines, we were talking about this before that it got to that level, because we didn't like this process. And we work together. So I think that, what I'm hoping for is that our bipartisanship today will have sticking power in the future. I hope that future legislators will look at this work saying, look, it was agreed to by both sides. And that is the one thing that I'm probably most proud of our work this year, is that we were able to come together and say, however this process is going to work going forward, we think we've got a better program because we're going to have more eyes on it, more checks and balances, better reporting. We've invested some money into this. And so for that reason, and again, we had some technical bills, some adjustments to other bills we could easily agree to. I want to thank the committee for the work that we have done, and I look forward to voting yes on the bill.
Thank you, Chair Baker. Yeah, I'll save some broader thank yous for after the vote, but I've appreciated the chance, Chair Baker, to put this proposal together. It's not massively groundbreaking, but in this tied session, it seems like it's an achievement to have any sort of bill get voted out of a committee at this point. I do want to note that businesses, employees, they're all people who have the basic needs that people have. And ultimately, the point of an economy is for people to be able to live lives that are happy and that are thriving. I'm glad that both workers and businesses are paying into a program in the form of paid leave that is not only allowing people to have those happy, thriving lives of being able to be with their babies and take care of their illnesses, but we know that for so many small businesses, they are so happy that they can compete for talent against big businesses in order to be able to offering a program like paid leave at an affordable cost, because that's what happens when everybody pools together to make that happen. So the thing that you're talking about the next couple of days may be a challenge for businesses. I recognize there's some concerns, but what a great opportunity it is for Minnesotans and for Minnesota businesses as well. And we've certainly heard from so many businesses that are happy about that. Members, appreciate the discussion today and the work on this bill. Of course, it's going to be ongoing in the coming weeks, and please continue to be in touch. But we'll move to a vote on a House file. Well, first, actually, we need to vote on the DE2. We had not done that. So, Chair Baker, I believe you renew your motion that DE2, as amended, be adopted on the bill, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Members all in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. And then, finally, Chair Baker renews his motion, House File 3732, as amended, be recommended for referral to the Ways and Means Committee. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The bill is on its way. Got a few thank yous to do, and I should ask first if there are any member comments just regarding the committee or our work together. Don't feel obligated at all, but I also don't want to cut it off if anybody wants to. Oh, and actually, I should note that staff is authorized to make technical changes to reflect the intent of the committee. Chair Baker, I assume that you agree with that statement. Okay. Some other members do as well. Representative Schultz, to you, sir.
Representative Greenman is always so excited to get out of here. So what we should do is we should get out of here quickly, and then we should go support a business in Representative Hussein's district.
We should do that regularly, yeah. Representative Hussein would say. Absolutely. Okay. Chair Baker, I'm not sure how you want to kind of do our thank yous.
I think we can double do it then. I think that and we can say that together as well. Again, I thank the committee members. This has been 3 days a week for the last 2 years, and again, I've appreciated getting to know all of you. I certainly want to thank our committee administrators, Travis and Spencer Johnson. Again, they are really the quarterbacks of the committee. I don't want to kid anybody to think that, Chair Pinto and I can carry all this load, get all the details right, but I think that our folks right there, the committee administrators, did a wonderful job. So thank you both for that. You guys did a great job. I'll just stick with my research again, yeah. Too. And again, it's hard to not thank David Sullivan either. But again, we've gotten to know each other well. Indiana Smallman, Dave Sullivan, we spend a lot of time behind the scenes. When members are doing other things and busy with other things, we have spent extra time doing the work that needs to be agreed to and worked through, and the details, and they really do matter. Our fabulous pages, Cayenne and Riley, did a great job this year. They were always first here, ready to go, and always cleaning us up, because the two chairs have always pushed it to the limit of the getting out of here on time thing. This room is in high demand, so we appreciate you very much.
And, Mr. Chair, I may jump in there just to say the members of the committee have kind of banded together. We have a gift for the two pages, and thank you so much for your work. You're really unsung heroes for us. And so we'll make sure that we get those gifts to you as the members have kind of banded together.
We really appreciate you. And, again, Aishat and Noah, again, our committee legislative assistants, did a wonderful job, both new to the position. First time at this, they made it look like it was very simple and easy. And again, I think that without saying, again, our nonpartisan staff, mm-hmm. Anna and Ashley, we always had these weekly meetings. Again, they keep us on track, keep us making, assuring that our deadlines are met. Don't play games with them, because they need to have time to process the details of getting the language right.
A comment we heard a number of times.
A number of times.
Permissionally. So said many times.
Feels like we had our quarterbacks with our CAs, but these are the head coaches. And mm-hmm. so we appreciate your work on this. And again, Mr. Chair, you can go on if I miss anybody, but again, there's a lot of...
And I agree with all that. Chair Baker, I'll thank Margaret Stevens with House Information, who's been covering our committee. I do want to make a special note regarding Ms. Shalene, that all the researchers have had to deal with two chairs, and which I can only imagine how challenging that is. In addition, she was covering an issue area that was the responsibility of a colleague who was unable to be around for personal reasons. But in addition, doing her own duty and then taking on a different topic, but then also dealing with the two chairs. Chair Baker and I are cordial. That does not mean that we always get along or are working in the same direction. And so for Micheline to deal with us in that way, Ms. Eng as well, but I think a lot of that was on Micheline's shoulders. So very much grateful to you for your work. I think those are all the thanks, except for all the members. We're grateful to you, and we are not done. We're going to keep on pushing and go right to the finish line. So. Well, we are done as a committee. Good point. So we believe we're done as a committee. We think this is the last meeting of the committee. But we've just voted out a bill. We want to make sure that we get it passed. So, Chair Baker, anything else?
That's it.
Okay. And you have no preview of another committee meeting, I guess.
Nothing to preview.
Nothing to preview. Members, thank you so much. With that, the meeting is adjourned.